Are there any questions? Yes.
Can you go through number 44 after the part that you
just basically solved it with one step and I couldn't do it.
Okay. So what you need to do is you need to see where do you map. I mean, I showed you that. So we have the ideal I is the ideal generated by x squared plus x plus 1, and we have j is the ideal generated by x cubed plus x squared plus 1. Okay. And now I want to see where can I map I. We want to map I plus x to j plus something. Okay, and we had seen j plus x did not work. So let me try j plus x plus 1. Okay. So to explain why do I pick x plus 1, I claim, I hope this is correct, that j plus x plus 1 is a root of y cubed plus y plus 1. So I take this polynomial and I now just write it in another variable to avoid confusion between the letters. That if I plug this into here, I get a root. Okay. Yeah, let's try this out. So let's give this a name. Let's call it little a. Let's calculate a cubed plus a plus 1. What is this? By the way, how we do arithmetic with cosets is j plus, okay? Now we evaluate, do this polynomial to the representative. So we get x plus 1 cubed plus x plus 1 plus 1. Okay, x plus 1 cubed by the binomial theorem is x cubed plus 3x squared plus 3x plus 1. Okay, and I just copy plus x plus 1 plus 1 here. Okay. Well, we work modulo 2, so 3 is the same as 1, right? Modulo 2. So what we, right, now I have the x cubed there. J plus x cubed. Well, I know that j plus x cubed is the same as j minus x squared minus 1. And that's because the difference x cubed plus x squared plus 1 lies in the ideal, right? So this is the same. So I can write this instead as j, okay, plus minus x squared minus 1 plus, copying the rest, x squared plus x plus 1 plus x plus 1 plus 1. Okay, calculating things together. The minus x squared and the plus x squared cancel out. The minus 1 and the 1 cancel here. So we get j plus 2x plus 2. But we work modulo 2, so this is the same as j plus 0. Okay, so what I have done is I've verified that this element, j plus x plus 1, is a root of this polynomial. Because I just evaluated it in the polynomial, right? That's the definition of something being a root of a polynomial. You plug it into the polynomial and you get zero. And indeed, that's what we got. Okay. So what I now claim is that that this gives me a map. And the reason why I claim it gives me a map is this element in the ring R modulo I plus X was a root of this polynomial. Right? So if I map, if I want to construct an isomorphism between the rings, something which is a root of a certain polynomial has to be a root of the same, the image has to be a root of the same polynomial. So therefore, I claim I want to map I plus x to j plus x plus 1. Okay. So this is in some way, this is on the one hand the justification, why do I pick x plus 1? And already showing that the counter argument which I had on Monday won't be a counter argument here. Of course, this is a polynomial of degree 3. It actually will has three different roots. That's one of them. I could have chosen either of the two other roots. And why didn't I choose them? Basically, because they will have x squared terms in, and it's just more messy to do arithmetic with them.
So are you saying there's three different ways to map?
Yes, there are three different ways to map. Yeah?
If you constructed, let's say, the multiplication table,
yeah?
For both,
yeah?
I was trying to use the table to figure out how x maps to x plus 1, and I was having a hard time.
Yes, because, well, the table will help you with some of the things now. However, we see how we map other elements. If you just want to see where X maps, yes, in some way you can see it from, well, from the arithmetic, but it's not an obvious lookup, right? What we have is, we have something where we have a third power and addition, so one would need to go quite a bit through the tables. Or the other thing which one can do, indeed, is to take both tables and to say, can you map the elements from the one group, sorry, from the one ring to the elements of the other ring, such that the one addition and multiplication table is mapped to the other addition and multiplication table, so that they are mapped to each other. The problem with trying this just is, at that point, you don't have a good idea where you have to map things. And yes, you could say you just try out all the, I plus x can't be mapped to I plus 0 or I plus 1, and we also had seen it can't be mapped to j plus x. So there are five possibilities, so you just try one of them out. But in general, trying to just see it on the tables, you would have still six elements which have to be mapped to six elements. And that gives you 720 ways of mapping. And that's something which just our brain is not very well designed to do. If you were writing it on a computer, then that would be a feasible approach to do, because it can do these tests very quickly. But I don't think there is an easy way to see directly from the tables where you map it. And the problem is basically that you need to, at the same time, not just see where are you, your two factors which you have mapped, but also the product map. And so you need to keep track of three things which are mapped and try to keep this together. And I wouldn't want to have to do this by hand. Okay, anyhow, so I claim this will be my map. So the map I claim shall be the following. I have I plus 0 goes to j plus 0, I plus 1 goes to j plus 1. And we had seen this already on Monday. Right. Now I know I plus x gets mapped to j plus x plus 1. I plus x plus 1 therefore gets mapped, because I want a homomorphism. This x plus one, I plus x plus 1 is the sum of these two elements, right? So to make a homomorphism, the image better gets mapped to the sum of these two images, right? So it needs to get mapped to j plus x, because if I add these two, because of the modulo 2 arithmetic, the two ones cancel out. Okay? So I can now conclude, once I prescribe this image, I can conclude where I plus x plus 1 has to be mapped. Okay, what about I plus x square? Well, I plus x square is the square of this element, right? So it needs to be mapped to the square of this element if it is a homomorphism. So it needs to be mapped to j plus x plus 1 squared, and that is j plus, okay, if we do modulo arithmetic, the binomial theorem, if you do work modulo p, the binomial theorem for the pth power works as one sum, as one sometimes would like it to work, but it doesn't do in the rationals, because the mixed factors in the middle all are multiples of 2, in this case multiples of 2 or in general multiples of p, so this is just j plus x square plus 1 square, which is x square plus 1. Okay, now I plus x square plus 1, x square plus 1 is the sum of these two elements, so the image has to be the sum of these two elements, so this has to be mapped to j plus x square. I plus x square plus x. Well, let's do it. Where does this get mapped to? That's the sum of these two elements, so it would have to be mapped to the sum of these two elements, and I get that is the sum is j plus x square plus x. Yes, here it happens to be the same representative. That's just happenstance. That's in some way, if you just have 8 elements, something like this is very likely to happen. Right. I plus... Okay, the last one, I plus x squared plus x plus 1. Therefore, it's the sum of this and this element. Therefore, this has to be mapped to j plus x square plus x plus 1. And that's now the map on all the elements. Okay. So far these are necessary conditions for a homomorphism. And I can also observe I have 8 elements which I'm mapping here, and I'm mapping to 8 different images. So my map certainly is 1-to-1 and onto. I can just see this by inspection here. Yeah?
You said that there are 3 different ways to get
it. Yes. Okay. That if I do a different thing, it will give me a different map, which again is 1-to-1. Right? I've now made one choice. I said I choose j plus x plus 1 as the image. Yes, you can make 3 different homomorphisms. And what you can actually note from this, if you have two rings and you have 2 different isomorphisms, you could take this isomorphism here and the other isomorphism back. And then you get a map on your original set, which mixes it some, an isomorphism from your original set to itself, which is again an isomorphism. Something like this is called an automorphism. This field has a non-trivial, actually has in total 3 automorphisms, and there is an area of algebra which is called Galois theory, where we won't be getting to in this course. This would be done presumably in 467, which deals with this, and there are interesting properties of these, but that's aside. That has nothing, well, it has to do with the problem, but not something which you need to bother about with this problem. So I could have made other choices, and then it would have gotten 2 other such mappings. And each of the mappings, if you try it out, you will see it would have ended up as a mapping which is 1-to-1 and onto. Okay? Right. So now I want to show that it is a homomorphism. And because I don't have nice theorems which tell me that it is an isomorphism, basically, to check the homomorphism property, I would have to do it the very hard way. I would need to try out basically all products and all sums. Okay, I mean, to show that it in general, that it preserves sums is not that horribly hard to do. That basically, with a little bit of linear algebra, one can do it. But for the products, it really would be hard. And therefore, I said, don't bother now trying all of them. Just try a few products, which is not really a full proof, but once you know how to do it, you could do the rest of the proof in the same way, and it's just tedious, busy work to do the rest. So let's just try a product. So let's say I take I plus x squared plus 1, and I multiply this with I plus x squared plus x. Okay? So I hope these are reasonably random elements. So what is this product? This product is, now I need to multiply out the representatives, I plus x to the 4 plus x cubed plus x squared plus x. Okay. Well, that's not one of the representatives which I have here, so I need to reduce this modulo the polynomial x cubed plus x plus 1. Well, I can write this here as, I know already x cubed basically gives me minus x squared minus 1, so I can replace the x cubed by minus x squared minus 1, and therefore I know from this I also know yes, and when I work in modulo 2, in the end, it's plus 1, yes.
You have x squared.
Yes. I take x cubed is x squared minus x squared minus 1. Oh, sorry, this was j, sorry. Thank you. Thank you. This was in j, sorry, I want to do this in I, right? I have I plus x cubed is the same as I minus x minus 1. Thank you very much. And therefore, I have that I plus x to the 4 is equal. Now I just multiply both of this. I just need to multiply by x. So this is I minus x squared minus x. Okay. So x cubed, I said, is minus x minus 1 and x to the 4. I can replace by minus x squared minus x. Collecting this together, I get this minus x squared and this x squared cancels out. This minus x and this x cancels out. So I get I plus x plus 1 using the fact that I'm working modulo 2. So that's the product in R modulo I. Now let's see what would phi do with this. Well, phi, now I look up in my table, which I calculated here, what are the images? The image of I plus x squared plus 1 is j plus x squared. The image of I plus x squared plus x is also j plus x squared plus x. So this is j plus x to the 4 plus x cubed. X cubed, now j plus x cubed is j minus x squared minus 1. X to the 4, and now I can conclude from here. So if I take this, j plus x cubed is j minus x squared minus 1, so j plus x to the 4, therefore, is this times x. So this is j minus x cubed minus x. And x cubed, I said, is minus x squared minus 1. Because I'm working modulo 2, I also could choose pluses here. So I'll now replace again the x cubed by x squared plus 1. So this gives me an x squared plus 1. So x to the 4 should become x squared plus x plus 1. Right. So the x squared cancels out here. The 1 cancels out here. So this product here is j plus x. And now I check, where does I plus x plus 1 get mapped under phi? How did I want to map it? I wanted to map it indeed to j plus x. So this is trying out, okay, This is trying out now just one product. If you built the multiplication tables before, you wouldn't have had to do this tedious work which I had here for the reductions. You could have just looked up what the products are, and then it goes a little bit faster. But basically, for a full proof now, I would have to go through all the possible products, which is not particularly interesting. So that's again why I said just try a few. And if you try others, you will see in the same way that it works out. Okay? You have a question, yeah?
I do. So I thought we were going to show that I plus x maps to j plus x plus 1.
Yes.
So that in reverse. Is that
okay. Enough? Well, this is now we are not showing where something maps. It's consistent with it, right? Here we showed, here I basically gave a plausibility argument that mapping I plus x to j plus x plus 1 makes sense. Okay. Now I said, if I map I plus x to j plus x plus 1, where do I need to map I plus x plus 1? Because that's what I have here as the product, right? Where do I need to map it? Well, it is the sum of I plus x and of I plus 1. And now I know that I plus x gets mapped here, I plus 1 gets mapped here, so it needs to be mapped to the sum of these two, which is j plus x. And it happens to be, again, we have 8 elements and the coefficients are just 0 or 1. It just happens to look exactly the other way around, but this is just because we have so few elements. This is really just happenstance for this. In the same way as it's happenstance that these two elements look as if they are mapped. Yes, they are mapped to elements with the same representative, but there is nothing behind this that it, or the only thing behind it is that if you map 8 elements to 8 elements, you have a pretty good chance that some elements, if you label them in a certain way, that some elements will be mapped to elements with the same label. Okay. Other questions? Well, how you would have used it basically to save you this tedious work which I had here with the modulo arithmetic. I mean, you can do it completely by hand. I just don't want to torture you. I mean, if
but there's no way to punch in both of these.
No. Well, I mean, that's not really the aim of the exercise. I wanted you to go through the steps. It's just, when I was a student, I remember when I was a student, if someone would have given me a problem where as part of the problem you have to do, I don't know, possibly 10, 15 modulo step arithmetic for polynomials, I would have said, well, this is such a stupid problem. So that's the reason why I'm just true why I said use the computer. You have the computer, they use it just to save you the uninteresting arithmetic. Yeah.
So this is just this holomorphism has to be described by the 8 elements mapping data. It's not like the easy one we did in class where you said the holomorphism is this and then right?
Yes, I mean, it depends what you mean by easy, right? Could I have written this with another in some formula? Actually, I could, because what I now want is basically, I know that I plus x, I said, is mapped to j plus x plus 1. So I could have written this homomorphism as I plus p of x. Okay, ring of p is every element I can write as a polynomial in I plus x, and therefore as I plus a polynomial in x, right? And a ring homomorphism must preserve polynomials, because polynomials are built together just from addition and multiplication. Well, you could have the coefficients, but if we work modulo 2, the coefficients are 0 and 1, and that's clear. So I could have said I plus P of x gets mapped to j plus the same polynomial evaluated in x plus 1. Okay, is this easier? Yes, it looks much shorter when I write it down. Is it easier to understand what is happening? What I've done with this table is basically just I've looked at all the possible polynomials and just evaluated this out. So I could write it in this form. I wouldn't write it by default in this form here, because I think this is more confusing than helpful. But if you wanted a compact representation, yes, this would be a compact representation. And, I mean, this is in general, if you have a map between sets, you need to represent it in some way. And what we, well, in some way, calculus and so has been misleading, because there these functions often are given by certain expressions, by something, okay, sine of x plus e to the x or so. But is sine of x really easy? Well, I would argue in some way, or one could argue in some way, you've just been brainwashed to think that sine of x is easy, right? If I ask you, what is the sine of 3? Please give me the number with 15 decimal places without using a calculator. That is very, very hard. What you would have to do is probably either to evaluate a power series, or you would have to make a real big circle and measure. In some way, just you've been accustomed to a situation that you say, yes, I can express it in such terms, and that's what I consider easy. But if you look at all the possible functions from the real numbers to the real numbers, there are tons of them. I mean, whenever you just take the standard coordinate system and you just, well, you could, even if you want continuous functions, you just draw a line and you just make sure that your line never has a vertical asymptote, right? You just draw some line that is a function. It's a perfectly good function. Since you drew it smoothly, it's even infinitely often differentiable. It is everything what you might want to have. But this function, you don't really have a good way of representing it. You can approximate it with polynomials or so, but if you try to write it exactly, well, unless you say, oh, I drew it there, my pen really is a bit thick, and now I interpret what the pen thickness is, there is no way, you don't have any way of representing it. So you can say, is it really a more complicated function by its behavior? No, it's just from the way how we represent it here. And so if we have homomorphisms, in some cases it is, we can describe them in an easy way. And these easy ways are convenient. Well, in the examples I gave you, for example, if I have a homomorphism on a ring with infinitely many elements, I can't write down what the images of all the elements are. There are just too many of them. So what I wanted to do there was to deliberately choose examples where the map is given by some rule which I can write down shortly and which is easily understood, because I want you to understand the concept of homomorphism. But there is no fundamental reason that every homomorphism would have to be in this form. Or on the other hand, what you can often do, if you have something described in a messy form, you might be able to use some shorthand or to invent almost some shorthand where you say, okay, that's what I mean. I write it in a short form. Just if I refer to it many times, that makes it easier. But it doesn't make it a better map or a better function or a worse function. It's just a different way of representing it. I mean, if you look at people, just the fact whether someone is called a short name like Joe, or called a rather long name, I don't know, Xantippa or something like that. It doesn't really say, well, it might say something about the parents of the person that they chose these names, but it doesn't really say anything about the person. Yes, the labels are different. The labels, one label looks much easier and the other label looks much more complicated, but it doesn't really say much in general about what kind of person it is. Well, the only thing it tells you is that the person who still uses a long name is not that lazy that they wouldn't want to write the full name. or vice versa, what I'm doing in a restaurant when they call names, I give my full name because I know that no American will ever give a name which is as long as Alexander. So if I call, I still know if they call, it's a food for brr and it's long, I know it must be me. But that's a completely, completely separate criterion. Okay. Other questions? Yeah?
Just out of curiosity, what were the other two choices that you could pick? Are they other roots?
They are other roots of x cubed plus x plus 1. Okay. I can show you if you want in some way how one can give out. You can get them in two ways. You can get them either now, we've tested already four elements, well, 0 and 1 we knew are not roots. J plus x was not a root, j plus x plus 1 was a root, so we have four more elements left. And I could try them out. The other thing what I can do, and I mean this is, again, this is not something you want to do by hand in general because it is messy, but what I can do is, I have a polynomial of degree 3. Okay. Polynomial of degree 3 is a little bit more complex. There you probably don't remember formulas for how to solve them. But you know, if you have a polynomial of degree 3 and you have a root, you can divide the linear factor off. Right? That's something, if you have I hadn't been talking here about finite fields or so, if I just would have said, I have this polynomial of degree 3 and I have some factor, x minus 1 is a factor of this, divided off, you would have known how to do it. Right? I can do the same thing here. It's just, I will have to do the same thing with my arithmetic of this quotient trick. So what I can do is, I can take y cubed plus y plus 1, and now I divide off the corresponding linear factor for this root. Well, this linear factor, the root is j plus x plus 1. So I divide off y minus j plus x plus 1. Okay, that looks horrible. But what you now do is just, well, I mean, don't do it by hand. It's a penalty exercise. Through polynomial division. You go through it in the same way as you're accustomed to. And just when you do arithmetic with your coefficients, you remember your coefficients. This is really actually, this polynomial really would be the polynomial j plus 1 times y cubed plus j plus 1 times y plus j plus 1. That would be this polynomial over the ring R modulo j. And now, you need to do coefficient arithmetic in this. Now you have to do division in the quotient ring, and in general for division in the quotient ring, either we could say we have the multiplication table and we can look it up. Otherwise, for every division, we need to do an extended Euclidean algorithm. So one can do it. I mean, this is can in the sense of I can use a teaspoon to dig a swimming pool. But it's not something which is particularly educative or... So we could do this, and if we divide this off, we get a quadratic polynomial. Okay. And then we have the quadratic polynomial, and there we could try to use the quadratic formula to solve it. Yes, the quadratic formula has a square root. So again, then we would have to pull a square root. But you can take the multiplication table and you could say, oh, the diagonal basically gives you a way how to find square roots. So that's... The quotient ring wouldn't have 8 elements. Suppose the quotient ring would have had 65,000 elements. Then I really wouldn't want to try them all. That would be the way to find the other roots. And to find them deterministically and in a way which the computer can do. But yeah, it's not something you want to do by hand. Okay? And yes, here probably the easier way is actually just to try out. Yeah, in the worst case, you need to try three elements, because then if both two the other two, or if the worst thing is I think one works, one fails, and then you still have to try one. Other questions? No? Okay. I have a question before I continue with the material, namely, will happen is basically we will finish rings in about the next few lectures, and then we will start with groups. And that's in some way a slightly awkward point then to have a midterm where you just started on a new topic. So if we would move the midterm 1 week later, would this inconvenience any of you? Yeah? Okay. So if you have the interview, it would include a bit of the new topic, but then less of the old topic. So what would happen if we do the exam on the 4th? We will have to do, just because that's the material, we don't have much from the new topic. So then I will have to make quite a few problems about quotient rings and homomorphisms and so forth. Not on November 4, but on November 11 at, no, not at 11, but at 12. I'll put homework as a reminder, and you decide whether you want to have it before or after. Sure, that's the, you, if you want to do it on the Friday afterwards, so then you would do it at the Pace Center. Just before you leave, come by, remind me of it just so we set it up.